Welcome to Tim Bray's Ongoing Podcast, which is an audio version of a selection of the articles on my blog, also called Ongoing. I'm Tim Bray. You can find the blog at tbray.org. This is pretty well the same story you would experience by reading it, but some people would rather listen. Here we go. This was published on the 31st of March, 2021, and is entitled Top View Plus Amdahl.next. I'm in fast follow mode here, with more Top View reportage. Previous chapters, reverse chronological order, are here, here, and here. Those are links. Fortunately, I'm not going to need 3,500 words this time, but you probably need to have read the most recent chapter for this to make sense. TLDR, it's a whole lot faster now, mostly due to work from Simon Fell, and that's a link to his GitHub profile. My feeling now is that the code is up against the limits, and I'd be surprised if any implementation were noticeably faster. Not saying it won't happen, just that I'd be surprised. With a retake on the Amdahl's Law graphics that will please concurrency geeks. What we did. I got the first PR from Simon remarkably soon after posting Top View plus Amdahl, which is a link to the most recent. All the commits are here, but to summarize, Simon knows the Go API landscape better than I do, and also spotted lots of opportunities I'd missed to avoid allocating or extending memory. I spotted one place where we could eliminate a few million map updates. Side trip. Map details. And when I say map, I'm talking about the built-in hash construct in the Go programming language. This is a little bit complicated, but we'll entertain gophers. The code keeps the counts in a map from string to pointer to uint64. Because the value is a pointer to the count, you really only need to update the map when you find a new key. Otherwise, you just look up the value and say something like, well, the count pointer exists equals counts referenced by key, and if it exists, you add one to the value pointed to, otherwise you update the map. It'd be reasonable to wonder whether it wouldn't be simpler just to say update the counter and then update the map with the value of the counter. Except for, Top View keeps its data in byte slices to avoid creating millions of short-lived strings, but unfortunately, Go doesn't let you key a map with byte slices, so when you reference a map, you say things like map name, square bracket, string of the byte slice. That turns out to be efficient because of this code, which is a link to a not-so-long-ago Go update, which may at first glance appear an egregious hack, but is actually a fine piece of pragmatic engineering. Recognizing when a map is being keyed by a stringified byte slice, the compiled code dodges creating the string. But of course, if you're updating the map, it has to create a string so it can retain something immutable to do hash collision resolution on. For all those reasons, the if-exists code above runs faster than updating the map every time, even when almost all those updates logically amount to no-ops. Back to concurrency. Bearing in mind that Top View works by splitting up the input file into segments and farming the occurrence counting workout to per-segment threads, here's what we got. One, a big reduction in segment worker CPU by creating fewer strings and pre-allocating slices. Two, consequent on this, a big reduction in garbage creation, which matters because garbage collection is necessarily single-threaded to some degree, and thus on the critical path in Amdahl's law terms. Three, modest speed-ups in the single-threaded, thus important, occurrence counting code. But Simon was just getting warmed up. Top View used to interleave filtering and field manipulation in the segment workers with a batched mutexed call into the single-threaded counter. He changed that, so the counting and ranking is done in the segment workers, and when they're all finished, they send their output through a channel to an admirably simple-minded merge routine. Anyhow, here's a retake of the Go versus Rust typical times readout from last outing. So there's three lines here. The first is labeled Go on the 27th of March, the second is labeled Rust, and the third is labeled Go on the 31st of March. So reading top to bottom, left to right. So user CPU time was 11 seconds on the 27th of March, is 10 seconds in Rust, and is now 7.4 seconds in Go. System time was 2.18 seconds on the 27th, is 1.42 seconds in Rust, and is 1.54 seconds in now in Go. The system utilization was 668% in Go on the 27th of March, 1143% in Rust, and is now 1245% in Go. And the total elapsed time was 1.973 seconds on the 27th of March in Go. It was 1.073 seconds in Rust and is now 0.717 seconds in Go. So we're pretty well ahead of Rust. I wouldn't be surprised at all if the Rust community rallied around and caught up or got ahead again, because, you know, Rust is fast. Anyhow, Simon is now a committer on the project. Amdahl's Law in Pictures. This is my favorite part. First, the graph that shows how much parallelism we can get by dividing the file into more and more segments, which turns out to be pretty good in the case of this particular task, until the parallel work starts jamming up behind whatever proportion is single-threaded. You're rarely going to see a concurrency graph that's this linear. And it's a really boring graph. It's pretty well linear, you know, with the number of CPU use being reported, pretty well a one-to-one linear function of the number of segments in the file. It starts to fall off at about 10 segments. And then there's the graph that shows how much execution speeds up as we deal the work out to more and more segments. And that one is your classic sort of inverse square looking thing. It falls from 5.5 seconds down to 2 seconds, just from going to from 1 to 2, and then down to 1 and change with 4, and less than 1 with 6. And then eventually, by the time you get out to about 12 or maybe 13 looks maybe optimal, it's at 0.7, as I said. Which turns out to be a lot up front, then a bit more than none at all, per Amdahl's law. Go thoughts. I like the Go language for a bunch of reasons, but the most important is that it's a small, simple language that's easy to write and easy to read. So it bothers me a bit that to squeeze out these pedal-to-the-metal results, Simon and I had to fight against the language a bit and use occasionally non-intuitive techniques. On the one hand, it'd be great if the language squeezed the best performance out of slightly more naive implementations, which, by the way, Java is pretty good at, after all these years. On the other hand, it's not that often that you really need to get the pedal this close to the metal. But command line utilities being applied to big data files, well, they need to be fast. And that's all, folks.